Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection from Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. As you almost certainly must know, in the United States, we're struggling to improve our health care access, our quality, and our affordability. There's numerous models throughout the United States that are being tried, and one that you may not be aware of is called concierge medicine. It's also known as retainer fee medicine or direct private practice. Today's guest, Dr. Dale Trommley, is a local family practice physician offering this concierge option. If you would like to ask questions or comments during the next hour as we discuss this way of providing and offering health care from a family practice physician, you can reach us in a couple of ways. Our local number, 550-8433, 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752, and our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. If you've never emailed in, you got to spell out line one, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, all at one word, all one word, line1@alaskapublic.org. Dale, I think this is the first time you've been a guest, so thanks very much for taking the time and coming in and talking about this.
Appreciate it. Thank you for the invitation.
So before we get going and talking about concierge medicine or retainer fee medicine or direct private practice, let's learn a little bit about yourself. How long you've been up here, what you've been doing until you started this new offering in medicine.
Okay. Well, Dad was in the Air Force, so we transferred up here when I was 17 and finished, graduated East Anchorage High School in 65. And then I went to Alaska Methodist University, now known as APU. And after graduating from there, then I went off to medical school in St. Louis. Did my medical school there, did my family practice residency in Dearborn, Michigan, and then after that did my military, and came back home here in 1979 and opened up private practice. So I've been in everything from by myself to with a couple other doctors to being with a large group to going back out on my own now over the past, that's about 36 and a half, 37 years now, I think. Yeah. Something like that. Time flies.
Yeah. Very similar. I came up here in 78, so we've got the same longevity, it sounds like.
Right. I've sent you a lot of patients, and we've shared a lot of babies together, yes.
All right. So let's talk about the topic today, concierge medicine. What is the term? What, if you were going to describe it to somebody, what are we talking about?
Well, to keep it very simple, it's a concept whereby for a retainer fee, for a flat fee, you hook up with a physician who will provide certain services for that, and then you've paid for the medical care or the access, as it were, and then you have access to the doctor 24/7. You've got the ability to have your family physician who's doing that, who knows you, and you know the doctor. The style of concierge medicine is all over the board. I've seen it everywhere from you just pay to be able to call the doctor directly on his cell phone or get to the head of the line for making appointments, all the way to where you pay one fee and all the services that he is able to provide in the office are covered for that fee. So there's a wide variety of that. And I spent some time, I spent about 3 years checking into this and first became aware of it when some physician mentors of mine in the lower 48 had suggested it and then started becoming more aware. And then finally patients were afraid I was going to retire. So they started talking to me too, just, you know, you ought to go and do this. So I investigated it. But that's what I found, that it is basically you pay the doctor, the insurance company reimburses you because you've already paid the doctor.
Mm-hmm. So is for most concierge medicine providers, they are not billing the insurance. That's left to the patient?
Again, that's variable. Ah. When I first was looking at setting this up, I didn't think that we'd have a way in which we could bill it for the patient. But with electronic medical records and systems and such, we are our office will file electronically the visit for the patient to their insurance company, and then we indicate to the insurance company that the patient has paid the bill, so therefore the check is supposed to go back to the patient. Mm-hmm. I don't know that all offices do that. It's, like I said, it's all over the board.
So this is relatively new. My understanding, it got started somewhere around 1996 or so in Seattle?
My understanding is, yes. Back in the mid-90s is when this concept kind of took on its definition, and it's gone by all types of different names, as you've alluded. And it's just kind of grown from there to where now it's throughout the United States. When I was doing the research, as of about 3 or 4 years ago, there were 8 states that either did not have concierge physicians or did not have an adequate supply. And one of those states was Alaska. So I decided to raise my hand.
Try to explain a little bit thoroughly, if you don't mind, just kind of spread it out a little bit better in our listeners' minds, is the difference between what you're offering and what a practice, say, you left not too long ago, and how they practiced.
Okay. In a concierge practice, the physician has a very limited number of patients. Most concierge physicians have between 150 and 600 patients, versus the average family physician has anywhere from 2,500 to 4,000 patients that he takes care of. With the limiting of the numbers, that physician has the ability to get to know his patients more intimately, be aware of what their situations are, be more accessible to them, and be able to provide that more personalized medical care. As a physician taking care of several thousand patients, you work really hard to keep track of all your patients and know what's going on, and you rely on your medical records, et cetera. And if you've been in practice for a long time, you get to know a lot of your patients very intimately, and so that, you know, you remember their name, their history. You know, I'll remember which room I saw the patient in, and may not remember their name all the time, but I remember right. as we talk about the right. details. But it's a very busy practice when you're taking care of that many patients. In a concierge practice, it's all about providing the patient with a more relaxed atmosphere, more time spent with the patient, addressing the issue that a lot of patients complain about, that my doctor never has enough time for me. It's, you know, 5 minutes in and out, and it costs me X amount of dollars. Mm-hmm. Concierge is designed for those group of patients who want to spend more time with the doc, who want a more relaxed setting, and the doc is able to therefore do it because he has a limited number of patients.
So in return for a retainer or a set fee, this physician, a physician doing this, is going to limit the number of patients that they're doing, and the patient and the physician agree that these services all will be covered for that one fee, mainly things that are done in the office.
Right, right. But not just what's done in the office. And again, you're not paying just for the fact that you can see the doctor in the office and there's no money back and forth because you've already paid for it, which that alone takes a lot of stress off the situation for the patient. But also the fact that you're seeing the patient, you're spending the time with them, and you're available, like I said, 24/7. And some doctors also include hospital visits, emergency room visits, et cetera.
Okay. So one thing, anybody that's interested in looking into concierge medicine, it seems to me, is to make sure you understand what you're getting for your money. Each physician may offer slightly different things, and so there may be different price arrangements that are agreed to by the physician and the patient for that yearly all-encompassing service, that whatever that service is that the physician's agreeing to cover.
Right.
How does insurance interact with this? My initial thought was you do this, or somebody gets into concierge medicine so that they don't have all the overhead involved with personnel and billing and record keeping and jumping through the hoops to document that you've done something in the office, which adds a tremendous cost to the overall healthcare bill, not only for an individual but for the country. So I thought that was part of the issue, was to get that off the table. But it sounds like it's not necessarily that clean of a move away from health insurance.
It depends on how the doctor wants to structure it. The idea of that insurance should be between the patient and their insurance company. Your medical care should be between you and your doctor.
Right.
You know.
Right.
You and I remember the days when the patient went to the doctor and paid for the office visit. The doctor was then gave the bill to the patient. The patient sent it into the insurance company, and the insurance company sent the money back to the patient. People today are not necessarily remembering that way it used to be done. So the insurance company is still involved that way. It's just, how do you go about getting them involved, shall I say?
And you said this is really an effort that started, let's say, roughly 10 years ago, that most states now have individuals practicing this kind of medicine primarily in primary care. That's maybe pediatrics, but particularly family practice in general internal medicine.
Right.
Why is that? Why is it limited into that group of individuals?
Well, as a family physician or a pediatrician, you're taking care of the entire patient or the entire family. Internal medicine, general internal medicine, you're doing the same thing. So it's easier for you to provide that general overall everyday care of the patient, take care of their, in my case, sore throats, sinus infections, you know, do their annual physicals, their pap smears, whatever it might be. It's kind of hard for a surgeon or cardiologist or an oncologist, you know, an orthopedist, to be a concierge physician unless they do a bundling type of thing. You know, I'm going to sign up with a surgeon, and if I ever need surgery in the future, I've already paid for it. That's doesn't work that way.
Yeah. One of the things I was reading is that one of the problems, and maybe also why primary care is where this is attractive, at least to physicians and apparently and probably, I should say, to some patients, is that what's happened is that reimbursements kind of have dwindled down. Costs have gone up, malpractice in particular, paperwork, insurance requirements, and so forth. That leads primary care physicians to increase the volume, the number of patients that they're seeing. There's a limited number of hours per day, so therefore you're spending less time with patients. Physicians are increasingly being shown, at least in primary care, to be, I think it's fair to say that the evidence is more dissatisfied with medicine because of this. And then there is this difference in the reimbursement of primary care versus some of the subspecialists and so forth. So all this is driven some physicians to say there must be a better way to contact again with the patient, spend more time with the patient, and feel more satisfied at the end of the day. Is that fit with an explanation that you might agree with?
That's a pretty good fit. You know, you go into medicine because you want to take care of patients. You like the idea of helping patients, being available to patients. And we all went to medical school with that idealism. And then you get out there and you realize that, you know, you've got bills pay, your staff wants to get their salaries, et cetera, et cetera. And then you start finding out that those who are handling the reimbursements now, the insurance companies, are driving the picture, and they're not wanting to pay for this, that, and the other thing, and limiting what you can do and limiting the amount. I can remember when I used to be when I was doing surgeries and assisting in surgery, you got paid a fairly comfortable percentage of the surgeon's fee, and then it, all of a sudden it dropped down to where they don't even pay for surgical assistance today. And so that starts limiting what you can do. And so as a family physician or a pediatrician or internist, you start saying, I've got an overhead, and I'm going to have to short-circuit my time with the patient. And so at the end of the visit, the doctor doesn't feel good because he knows that there's information left on the table the patient hasn't been able to ask. The patient doesn't feel good because they went, well, I paid you this amount and you only spent that amount of time. And so everybody's getting dissatisfied with that because it's no longer what's best for the patient or caring about the patient. It's all this other business stuff comes into the picture.
I'm going to get off a little bit here, the tack, just to kind of follow up so perhaps listeners can appreciate at least maybe my point of view. Perhaps you're going to agree with it, that what we did in all of Western society is we began to offer health insurance to people, and I think it started somewhere, I think, after the Second World War. If I look back, First World War in Germany, and then the United States, Blue Cross came in, and then Medicaid or Medicare. But what we did is that we used health insurance as an insurance, which was different than the primary, when we started this system of health insurance, different than the primary purpose for insurance in almost every other way it's used. And what I mean is, insurance is traditionally used to pay, to kind of hedge against the loss of something you can't afford to lose. You don't insure all the repairs that are possible on your house. You insure it against catastrophic losses that may happen, and fire and so forth, that would really be difficult. Or same with car insurance and so forth. But what we did at least in this country, because I'm pretty sure about it, is we started with almost $0 deductible. Everything was covered, and that led to lots and lots of increased costs. And we're kind of maybe struggling to get back away from this. So I look at how we used health insurance, how we established health insurance as part of the reason we've got ourselves into this access, quality, cost conundrum that we're in. Does that make sense?
Yes, very much.
You agree with that?
I agree. Uh-huh. You know, I don't have my car insurance to cover the oil change and the tire changeover.
Right.
You know, I've got it for when there's an accident or, you know, malfunction or something.
So ideally, we ought to have catastrophic health insurance. And then, in a sense, if that's true, one way to do things is have catastrophic health insurance and then have these agreements with physicians in various ways to provide the care that they need and want. And maybe we wouldn't have a huge part of the overhead we now have, which is related to insurance, which is covering things that really traditional insurance may not be correct for.
Right.
So in a sense, we're kind of circling back, if that makes sense, to listeners and everybody.
As patients have said to me, oh, you're going back to the old way, you know, with the doctor-patient relationship.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Let me just remind listeners once again that this is Line 1, your health connection. We're originating from Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. My guest today is Dr. Dale Tromley. He's a local physician here in Anchorage who has began to offer what is known as a concierge or retainer fee or direct private practice care to his patients, and we're discussing what that really means and why we're at this juncture in healthcare where we're trying all kinds of new methods to address access, quality, and affordability for healthcare. If you're listening today and you have comments or would like to ask questions, you can call us directly at 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Dale, could you take us back to, in your mind, as to maybe when you started thinking about it, maybe where you first heard about this, and then how you went about deciding how you were going to do this, or whether you were going to do it, and how you were going to do it?
It's
bold to go out on your own and do some new things. So I'm envious of
that. Why not? You know, change is difficult for everybody, but if you don't change, then things don't improve, and you know, things don't happen. That's how this whole world exists. You know, everybody's willing to change. Several years ago, I was debating, people would say, well, when are you going to retire? You can't retire. Don't ever retire, et cetera, et cetera. And so I got some mentorship with physicians and stuff that I know in the lower 48. And they're the ones who brought up the idea of, well, why don't you consider concierge medicine? My first reaction was, well, I don't know what that is and how does that work? And I don't know that I want to change. I'm comfortable where I am. And then over time, you started hearing more and more about concierge medicine or retainer fee medicine. And so I started looking into it, investigating it. There were several organizations that do that nationally that have turned it into a, shall I say, a major business. It was originally, as you and I were talking earlier, started by a physician in Seattle area. And then other organizations have jumped on board and set up nationwide connections for concierge medicine. So, like I said, I started just kind of watching this, exploring it, trying to figure out how would I make this work? Would I really want to do that? I really thought that when I made my last change, okay, this is it. I'm done. I'm not going to make any more changes. I'm going to be comfortable just doing outpatient medicine. I've stopped delivering babies. I've stopped doing surgery. I've stopped doing surgical assist, stopped putting patients in the hospital, you know. My wife was much more comfortable because I wasn't getting up in the middle of a snowstorm at 3 a.m. to go and deliver a baby and forget to call her and tell her that I made it safely to the hospital, you know. So, and then when this started happening, I started thinking, okay, I'm going to have to change again. If I want to continue providing quality medical care to my patients and meet their needs of being able to spend time and being involved. So patients would spontaneously come to me and say, you can't retire. Why don't you consider changing? Why don't you consider doing concierge? So like I said, over the past 3 years or so, I've done a lot more investigating and preparing for it. And there is the Academy of Family Practice that has a statement of support of the concept. In 2003, the American Academy of Private Physicians was established because the number of concierge or retainer fee physicians was growing in the country. And so now I had a resource that I could go to and learn more about. And then as you start Googling all over the place, you start finding out a lot more about it. So doing all of that, I finally decided, okay, I'm gonna make this change in my life. And for those patients who want to keep their doctor, they like their doctor and they want to keep their doctor. They are willing to have someone who's going to be there available 24/7. And I'm willing to make that sacrifice, that commitment to being available to them, this was the way to go.
Mm-hmm. When did you start?
The end of June. So I've just been at this a few months now.
All right. And how do people contact you? If they wanted to call your office, what's the contact number?
The office number is 222-6001. And so they can call that 24/7 if they want to, because I utilize a service that when the phone is forwarded from the office, it goes directly to my cell phone. I don't go through an answering service.
622-6001. Okay. Are there other providers in Anchorage or Alaska that you're aware of that have begun to think about this type of service or her already offering it?
I found out from the pharmaceutical reps that there was a physician in Fairbanks who had been doing this for 5 or 6 years, and I just last week learned that he moved into Anchorage. So I have not met with or talked with him. As I've talked with other physicians, because I've stuck my toe in the water, there are other family physicians here in town who have said, well, I've been thinking about doing that. I think that's a good idea. Let me see how it goes. So, okay, I'll be the first one to raise my hand. I can do that.
All right. Well, let me remind listeners again, you're listening to Line 1, your health connection. Our local number again is 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. Our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take our typical halfway through the program break for about a minute, and then we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Trombley on concierge medicine. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1 on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Line 1, your health connection, originating from Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard, and today we're discussing concierge medicine. It's also known as retainer fee medicine or direct private practice. It's a new offering from primary care physicians primarily who are, for a set fee, willing to give you certain services. We've begun to talk about how Dr. Trombley initiated this. We've listened a little bit about how he got into it, why this kind of service is being offered now, and not only in Anchorage, but across the country. In the second half of the program, we're going to get into some details about what he offers and certain situations that come up that people may have questions about. But I can't help but remind you, if you've got specific questions about the idea, about why this kind of service is being offered, or questions that Dr. Trombley can answer specifically about how he practices, why don't you give us a call or give us an email. Our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. Our local number, 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And as usual, remember, if you're listening between 8 and 9 p.m. on Monday evening, you're listening to a tape rebroadcast, so we will not be here to answer your questions. Before I get back to Dr. Trombley, there's a couple of little promos I need to do. One I promised that is about a program that's going to be this Saturday, November 14th, elderly individuals who are looking for tips about living longer and weller. It's called Don't Fall Fest, F-A-L-L, Don't Fall Fest. It's going to be two offerings, the same offerings over once in the morning, once in the afternoon, from 10:30 to 12, the first session, and then from 1 to 3:30 in the afternoon, the same sessions repeat. It's going to be on 222 East Tudor Road, 222 East Tudor Road. If you want to know more about this, and there's going to be both some providers, some physical therapists, and some personal trainers there discussing safety and longevity and things you can do to improve your quality of life as you age, the way to get more information is info, at don'tfallfest.org. And finally, a little bit of self-promotion, so to speak, if you don't mind. Some of you are already aware that myself and my co-host, Prentice Pemberton, will be providing or present at a relaxed luncheon here at the studios Thursday, November 12th. That's this Thursday from 11:30 at Alaska Public Media. The purpose is so that you can learn a little bit more about the two of us, the history of our program, the future plans, and future guests. And we would also like to take the opportunity to ask you to join the conversation, and so you can bring us your ideas and suggestions for Line 1. We look forward to seeing you there. However, if you're interested in coming to this luncheon, you have to buy a ticket. And to do that, you go to alaskapublic.org for the details. That's this Thursday, November 12th at 11:30 a.m. at Alaska Public Media. All right, Dale, let's back off a second, get back to this concierge medicine a little bit. Tell us, if you don't mind, let's take a patient who calls and is interested in what you're doing. How do you explain that to them? How do you explain the offerings and answer the common questions they might have?
Okay. I like to sit down with them face to face. It works much better that way, even if these are patients who have been coming to me for the past 35 years. Because this is a new or different concept, a lot of patients are having difficulty wrapping their minds around just how does this work. And you can read up on it, you can Google on it, et cetera, and get some ideas. But I prefer to sit down with them and just answer their questions, discuss the situation, tell them what it's all about, and help them understand it that way. I have found that doing that, patients have a better gist for the deal, and they can also decide if this is really what's going to be best for them. I've met with some patients and I said, you know, I don't think this is going to be a good fit for you, which might surprise them because it isn't for everybody. I want my patients to be comfortable with the practice setup, the offering that I have, and to understand it clearly as to how that blends in with their insurance company, et cetera, which, like I said earlier, a lot of them are having difficulty. What? The insurance company is going to send me a check? I had a patient, and one of my concierge patients said, Doc, I got a $250 check 6 weeks ago from the insurance company. What am I supposed to do with it? I went, that was payment back to you for the visit. Yeah. He goes, oh. I said, you can cash it or put it in your savings account and use it towards your next, you know, payment, whatever. You know, it's different way of thinking because all of a sudden the insurance company is reimbursing you. Sitting down with the patient face-to-face, explaining that, answering their questions about how does this work with my insurance, how does it work with, you know, whatever the situation is much more effective. So I like to make sure that it's a good fit for the patient and for me. I don't want patients being unhappy with it because they didn't understand the picture. And when they figure out that, oh, this is not over and above expenses, this is getting reimbursed, and they go, oh, that's much more doable, and they understand it. Right. So that's what I like to do. I sit down with them face to face. If it's someone who's known me for a long time, we can do it on the phone sometimes. Right. But it's nice to just, especially if it's a new patient, to do the face to face.
What services do you agree to provide for your X dollars of charges?
Okay. I've developed two tiers, as it were, of membership to the practice. And again, I've learned over time to try to help patients put their arms around this thing or their mind around it. We're all on the plane. We're going to Seattle. Okay? Some people are going first class and some are going coach. First class, you pay more. You might have a little bit more leg room. They'll give you the warm peanuts and the wine. We're not giving you the peanuts and the wine at the office. But the point is that you get more bennies in the first class. In coach, you've still got the flight to Seattle. You paid less, but you also pay a la carte. So there are certain procedures and things that are common to both. And one is 24/7 access to me. You can call me whenever. I now sleep with my cell phone turned on next to the bed. Okay? Before, I didn't have to worry about that. Answering service and whoever was on call took care of it.
Right.
So they have 24/7 access. You're dealing with a physician whose focus is on health and wellness. It's not just on crisis intervention, but it's on preventive medicine. So patients are so geared to only going to the doctor when they're sick. I want them coming to me when they're not sick. So we can sit down and let's talk about how your goals are with your weight loss or your blood pressure or your diabetes or how's that situation with the death in the family or the problems with the divorce or the stress at the job or whatever it is. You and I both know patients will come into the office for a cold.
Right.
and by the way, doc,
right.
and they pull out their list.
Right.
I want them to feel comfortable making an appointment to come in and discussing what's on their list and not having to just do it under the guise of I got a sore throat. And so we do wellness checks as well as crisis intervention checks, you might say. So I explain this to the patient, and that's what I provide in this situation of concierge to all of my patients. The difference between coach and first class is that in the office, I'm allowed to do certain labs. They're called CLIA wave labs, certain laboratory procedures that can be run in the doctor's office. I've chosen to do some of those and include those in the cost of the tier one first class level. If you come in and you've lacerated yourself or you need something cut off or whatever the situation is, I can take care of that in the office. You need a DOT, you need an FAA exam. I'm qualified to do those. And so that's all included in the picture of the care. In coach class, you've got the access, you've got the 24/7 availability. You come in, the office visit is taken care of. You know, I write your prescriptions, refer you to the specialist, whatever it is, just the same as in first class. But if you need, you think you got a bladder infection, that's a la carte. You'll get charged for the lab, for the urinalysis, or the blood draw, or whatever it is that I'm going to physically do for you. Or you come in with a laceration. If you coach class, I'll sew it up. But then you pay for that, and then we bill that to your insurance. Mm-hmm. In both situations, we are electronically set up to be able to bill your insurance company. That means you come in and see me. We tell the insurance company you were in for this visit, this diagnosis, this was what was done, and we submit that electronically to your insurance company, and then they see that you've already paid the bill, so they reimburse you. That's done on both of those visits. It's just whether or not you're going a la carte or first class.
Okay. We have three phone calls, a couple of emails. People have got some specific questions. Let's
sure.
go through those. Sally, you're on line one?
Yes.
What can we do for you?
Yes, hello. My question is about the fees for the service. My understanding is that a patient would pay a set fee for the concierge service for a year. What would occur if a person did not need to see the doctor during the year, or only needed to see the doctor one or two times, and would any of that fee be reimbursed?
Good question. Do you carry car insurance for your automobile?
Of course.
Do you have house insurance for your house?
Yes.
How many times last year did your house burn down?
Zero.
Did you pay your premiums for your insurance?
Of course.
Of course. So it's the same concept here. Okay, I'm not an insurance company, but you pay for that. And again, my focus is on health and wellness. So I'm going to definitely encourage my patients to come in for at least an annual checkup. And I'm available to help deal with whatever else is going on. So it's the same way. If you choose not to use it, then that's your choice. But I've chosen to sleep with my cell phone turned on next to the bed and carry it with me when I'm traveling, et cetera, so I'm available.
Okay, so you were laughingly earlier talking about how you would go to the hospital in the middle of the night and would forget to tell your wife that you made it safe, et cetera. And now you're sleeping with your cell phone all night, and so... I guess I have to ask, what's in it for you?
Okay. What's in it for me is that I'm now taking care of only a few hundred patients instead of several thousand. The question that I had when I talked to concierge physicians is, you're on call 24/7? I mean, do you ever sleep? Do you ever travel? Do you ever do anything? And they went, you're dealing with a different mentality of patients here. Your patients know that you're available 24/7. They know that they can make an appointment to come in and see you just to talk about whatever's on their mind. They don't call you in the middle of the night because they're constipated or they got a sore throat that's been bugging them for 3 weeks. The patients, you're dealing with a mindset that is much more respectful of the doctor, and the doctor is therefore able to provide that medical care, and you're not phone called to death, as it were. That's what concierge is all about, being available. And like I said, your patient is not going to abuse the system.
I'm gonna guess, because I don't do this, but mm-hmm. I understand the problems with healthcare day to day is in our office, we've made just a financial decision that we're going to spend a significant amount of time with patients, and we're going to limit the number we see. And what I think I would also answer, and you tell me if I'm wrong about Sally, is you have a much more comfortable, leisurely time you can spend. You can spend more time with patients because there's less. It's not just these after hours things. It's the quality of the interaction with the patient and not feeling stressed about having to see so many patients a day just to meet the overhead and so forth. You know what your income's going to be for that year, and you have a pretty good idea on what your costs are. And otherwise, we don't have that luxury, so to speak. So there's a lot of advantages to both sides of this equation. That's why it's somewhat interesting to people.
Right. I've been able to cut the overhead because when I was in private practice, solo practice, I had a nurse, I had a receptionist, and a billing individual. So I was in a situation where I was supporting three other families beside my own.
Right.
There are concierge practices in town where there are three family physicians with one employee who handles everything. I have one employee, obviously, in mine. But it's kind of like, how do they do that? Well, you're not dealing with all the other rigmarole. No. Clearly, 40%, according to the statistics, of an overhead is the fact you have to hire all these other people because you're seeing 15, 20, 25 patients a day, you know, and billing the insurance and dealing with that. The patient has a much more relaxed visit with the doctor. And the doctor, in turn, has a much more relaxed time with the patient. We can sit and talk and converse and handle the, oh, and by the way, questions.
Barbara, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Yeah, my question is a quick one. How does it work for Medicare, or can it work with Medicare?
Good question there. In the Medicare situation, I, just like when I was for the past 13 and a half years with the group, we don't participate in the Medicare situation. We don't bill Medicare, so therefore the patient is not able to bill Medicare. I've still maintained that. And that really cuts a lot of overhead and hassle out of the picture, too, when you don't play the game with Medicare. By the way, it's also important to realize that nationwide, I've seen numbers anywhere between 45 to 55% of the patients who are concierge patients are Medicare age. And that's because they like their doctor and they want to keep their doctor. When the patient comes into the office, anything I can do in the office is covered by the fee. Anything otherwise, we have that done and it's billed to their Medicare. So if they need an X-ray or they need a mammogram and they need a certain lab work that isn't CLIA waived, that's still billed to Medicare.
Thank you.
All right. Have another question. This came in by email. Is what questions might someone who's approaching or interested in a concierge practice ask the physicians? What are the things you suggest would be important to get clarified?
I think it's important to know just what is going to be covered by the specific fees. If you've got a concierge situation where there are multiple accesses. For example, some concierge practices charge anywhere I've seen from $1,500 a year to $6,000 a year just for the ability to call the doctor directly on his cell phone. And when you call for an appointment, you put at the head of the line. Then there's the other realm where there's a flat fee of variable for covering medical care in the office, doing laboratories, surgeries, that is sewing up things or taking things off. It's a whole realm there. So it's important to know exactly what's covered. I've structured mine so that the first class, or tier one, covers a bunch of labs. And both of them, if you get admitted to the hospital, you go to the emergency room, I'm going to do my best to get over there and see you. I had one patient in the hospital who I saw her every single day. She was in the hospital. There was no additional charges for that or anything. She was a concierge patient. She commented to me, you saw me more than my doctor did, who was in the hospital. And the fact that when you go to the emergency room and you see a doctor you don't know, and the doctor doesn't know you, and you're admitted to the hospital to a hospitalist who doesn't know you and you don't know them, and they rotate every week, to know that your family physician is able to interact either personally or by phone or whatever the situation with the emergency room physician or your hospitalist is extremely reassuring and comforting to the patient and helps reduce their stress level while they're in the hospital, and also helps continue that medical care when you're discharged from the hospital because the doctor's been involved all along the way, just like in the old days, Dad, when mm-hmm. we put our patients in the hospital and we followed them.
So in a sense, it's back to this Alaska Airlines flight, first class versus not, are going out and buying a stove or an oven or a refrigerator. There's different prices out there, and each one has different amounts of benefits. And you're trying to find the one that meets your needs and match that with someone who is offering those particular needs. So there's a huge price difference between – there is potential for a huge price difference between physicians that are offering concierge practice, and part of that is what they're – offering on for that fee.
Right.
If you're going to build a house, you're trying to match that as best you can.
Right. If you're going to build a house, you're going to sit down with the builder and say, what are you going to provide for this amount?
Right.
And that's so you as a patient need to find out exactly what the doctor is able to and willing to provide.
The other question on the same email is what should the patient expect from her physician and length of time that they may stay in practice. So she's saying, what happens if you decide to retire or you get ill, or what about vacations and what happens there?
Well, the vacation and travel and stuff is a good question. So I'm down at a medical meeting in LA or another one down in Arizona, and I get a call on my phone about a patient, and he's get a job over in Hawaii, and his boss has informed him he's got to stay there for 2 more months working on the job. And he goes, what do I do? I'm going to run out of my blood pressure medicines. What do I do? Well, he doesn't know that I'm out of state. He just knows that he's a concierge patient and his doctor's available. So I called and I said, okay, what town are you in? Where's the nearest pharmacy? What's the number? And I called the prescription because I've got access to his medical records and I can handle it. So a lot of the stuff can be handled when I'm on vacation or out of town, or the patient is on vacation or out of town. Obviously, if it's something that you need a physical, hands-on situation, then the coverage, if you're in town, I've got that set up. I spent 13 and a half years over at Primary Care Associates, and I was at the Huffman office. Excellent people, excellent situation, excellent care. My patients, I feel very comfortable with the ones who did not follow me to concierge, to being staying there and being seen and taken care of. Well, I also feel very comfortable in saying to my concierge patient, you know, you've cut your thumb while you're chopping potatoes and I'm not in town, go over to Primary Care Associates and get seen and taken care of there. That's how we'll work it out. The doctors there are very comfortable in doing that. And some of them have been in situations where in the lower 48, they have had that relationship with concierge physicians. So realizing that a lot of times it can be taken care of, you know, by phone. Let me give you another example. This is kind of personal. I get a call on Christmas Eve from my granddaughter, Dad, gee whiz, she's got this, that, and the other thing. So he gives me this situation. I went, you know, son, she's got an appendicitis. Take her to the emergency room. Guess where my granddaughter spent her Christmas Eve a couple Christmases ago? Getting her appendix taken out. So sometimes because you know the patient and you know the situation, you can advise them and you can handle the situation by phone and turf them off to the best medical care. So if I'm sick, well, you know, if I'm totally incapacitated, that's one thing. Like I said, my backup is to use where I've been for 13 and a half years, Primary Care Associates. Excellent situation.
I have another email that really asks the question is, are insurance companies, or how are insurance companies looking at this type of practice? Are they concerned? Are they okay with it? What's your experience? What do you read nationally?
That's a good question, and I'm not the one to answer it because I'm not, you know, in the background with the insurance companies. All I know is that when the patient sees me, we submit it to the insurance company. The insurance company is geared up to handling crisis intervention or office visits, whatever you want to call it. And they see a claim come in for a visit. It's been paid for. We indicate check goes back to the patient. That's how insurance companies function. I don't know about all the politics of the other.
Okay. It's probably about 7 or 8 minutes left. I'm going to remind listeners that once again, if you're just kind of tuning in, we're talking about concierge medicine with Dr. Dale Trombley, a family practice physician who's been just beginning to offer this style of practice in Anchorage. It's a practice that's been throughout the lower 48, beginning in 1996 or so. Seems to be slowly growing, maybe rapidly growing. I'm not sure how I would define that, but it's definitely getting more attention. If you've got questions or comments, you can call us directly at 550-8433. Our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. We also have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. A question that came to my mind when I was thinking about what happens if somebody moves out of town, has to leave, has got this one-year agreement with you, but is really going to move out of town. Is there considerations for something like that happening?
The way I set it up is I do have several patients who spend half the time in town and half the time out of state. They're still my patients. They're still in contact, and I can still take care of them. So if they've signed up for first class or coach, then I take care of them that way. I do have some patients who spend the majority of their time outside. I have set up another category whereby, like I said, I can still take care of them by phone. And, hey, we've got Skype today. We've got, you know, video, you know, on the phones and stuff. You can still see things, what's going on. Just like my son said, Dad, what kind of a rash has he got now? And he sends me a picture. So, you know, you can still handle that. So for those patients who are living the majority of the time out of state, I cut it such that they pay a different fee, and then when they come into town, then we take care of them here.
How about different age groups? What have you put an age limit on in the youngest or the oldest, or are you taking all comers from an age standpoint?
I'm taking all comers. I'm a family physician. I'm not going to deliver babies again. Some of the patients were excited. Oh, you're going to back to deliver babies? No, I'm not going to deliver babies. But I will take care of cradle to grave, if you want to use that terminology. I'm still doing that. And that is a large percentage of people today who are doing concierge medicine, families of 20-somethings, 30-somethings with kids who like the idea that their doctor knows them and their family and their kids, and there's that comfort level. So, sure, I'm going to keep doing family practice.
How about patients with more chronic conditions? As we talk about older individuals, people that might have early onset or developing dementias or chronic heart disease or chronic arthritis or diabetes, any problems with that?
I'm a family physician. I do what I can within the scope of experience and practice and training to handle all that. That's what a family physician does. It takes care of cradle to grave. And you make use of specialists where you need to. So that's no problem. And that's why a lot of the Medicare patients want to keep their doctor, because their doctor knows them, has taken care of them for years. And in my case, we've grown, not older, we've grown together over the years. And so we know each other. And there's that comfort level, and we can handle those kinds of problems.
Another thought that came to my mind is you mentioned that you have certain lab studies that you can do that don't require some special supervision or expertise that are what we call not or CLIA waived that are often done in physicians' offices. What about immunizations or even x-rays? People may have questions about that.
X-rays and such, obviously, I do not have an x-ray machine in the office. So we get those taken care of wherever the patient wants to have that done, whether it's, you know, one of the hospitals or one of the outpatient x-ray places, et cetera. Immunizations, at this point in time, it is a low-volume practice. And I've learned that in talking, Thad, to your office, that you, when you buy the tetanus shot, the Tdap immunizations, you have to buy 10 of them at a time. And when you open the packet to give one shot, you have to use the other 9 within 30 days or they're expired. That doesn't make it very cost effective. And more pharmacies around town are doing all of the immunizations. So you make use of what's going to be cost effective. So that's what I've started doing, is just saying, well, you need your tetanus shot, stop by the pharmacy.
We've got a couple of minutes left, and one of the questions that comes up, and I didn't even think about it, but you mentioned before we started, is there are some requirements for the accountable care organization to have certain kinds of health insurance, or otherwise they're going to begin to get dinged some increased taxes. How does concierge medicine interact with the accountable care organizations?
I learned—
not accountable care, the Accountable Care Act, I should
say. Okay, the program, right. Yeah. What I have learned, and it was written into the program, if a patient has a concierge physician and a major medical or high risk, what's the other terminology that for?
High deductible policy.
Then they're not going to get dinged. Mm-hmm. That they've got somebody, an insurance policy that's going to take care of their car accident, their appendectomy, their emergency surgery, and they've got a concierge physician that takes care of their sore throats, colds, runny noses, everyday physicals, et cetera, et cetera. So that way, then they've got it covered, and it's written into the law that qualifies.
All right. Final thoughts. Got just a couple of seconds.
It's not for everybody, but it's for patients who want to have a doctor who has the time, who will take the time, who's available. My focus is about providing quality medical care to patients and not feeling rushed and not feeling that I've got the almighty dollar driving the whole picture. I'm going to take care of the patient, provide as cost-effective medical care as possible. And doing a concierge practice where you've got the time with the patient allows you, therefore, to maybe do less in testing, less in procedures, because you can listen to the patient. I remember in medical school being taught that if you talk to the patient long enough, they'll tell you what the diagnosis is. And the problem we see today a lot of times is you don't have the luxury of that time. So let's get this lab, that lab, this blood test, this x-ray, whatever it is. And just think for yourselves, how often did the results come back? It was normal. Well, maybe, you know, if the doctor had the luxury of time, you could have avoided some of those other expenses and therefore cut the cost. And one other thing to think about is concierge physicians, as studies show, have a 71 to 79% fewer hospitalization rate than the regular. So that cuts cost.
My thanks to today's guest, Dr. Dale Trommel. If you want to know more, his phone number is 222-6001. If you'd like to continue the conversation on concierge medicine, you can join KSK on Facebook, and you can find that link at www.alaskapublic.org. Cigarette smoking is the most common risk factor associated with lung cancer, but lung cancer even occurs in those who've never smoked. You may be at risk, and if you'd like to know if you should be screened for this particularly dangerous type of cancer, join us next week when Prentice Pemberton will host a program on screening for lung cancer, November 16th at 2 p.m. Pat Yak is Chief Content Officer at Alaska Public Media. Dave Waldron graciously engineered today's program. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.